Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey everyone, it is the Red Men Originals podcast with me, Paul Machin, Chris Pajak, Chloe Bloxham, Dan Club. Heavy conversations going on around the merits of tattoos at the moment because Toffee TV have just live streamed one of their underlings being tattooed.
Ped bullies him into getting a second.
Cool.
Wild.
I know. It's a funny old day in the midst of an international break, isn't it?
Yeah.
I
mean,
we've got nothing to talk about. So imagine what Toffee TV have got going on. Well, they've got takeover stuff, you'd think. Okay.
That was the title of the video.
Was it?
Yeah, it was like
Tattoo Takeover
777.
Yeah. Oh, and
Ned then they added the tattoo stuff in afterwards.
It was a separate stream, lads. Come on.
Yeah, they're occupying themselves anyway. They're keeping themselves happy, whatever it takes. We are going to be discussing the
Ripples. Head's going to do the third tattoo.
I'm amazed they have not bullied into I genuinely thought that was what was going to happen. He was going to come in and start tattooing people.
Wild.
Yeah, it's a good job we haven't got an HR department, is all I'll say. Right, we're going to be discussing the next seven for Liverpool. When the international break is over, the Reds are back in action. There's a run of seven games until the next international break. And we're going to have a look at them, four in the league, three in the cup, and have a little chat around the obstacles facing the Reds in that. And then in part two, we'll see how well that goes. There might be a bit of overspill, but we'll have a little bit of a chat about director of football news as well. So, yes. Yeah, as mentioned, Chris, four league, three cup. On paper, it's a pretty nice run of fixtures, but anything from it particularly stand out for you?
The derby, funnily enough, being the 12:30 kickoff, is the main one. Although, if it wasn't a derby, if it was just any other club playing Everton, you'd think that they would probably win the game. Jürgen's shown so much sort of disrespect to Everton in his lineups over the last few years, which I think hurts them more than anything. Yeah. Like I kind of enjoy that sort of extra needle that's given to the derby by Jürgen. I think Liverpool are miles better and will be better than Everton, and it should be a game where we win quite comfortably, to be honest with you. And after that, I'm looking at all of these fixtures thinking, we can win every single game here if that's what we want to do. I think the only reason we wouldn't win seven is maybe we make a couple too many changes for the games that maybe we see as don't matter quite as much.
Yeah, which could be the derby, because you're right. I think there's a thing, Dan, where Jürgen often has looked at Everton over the years and gone, they know their shit as well. Mm-hmm. So if I put out a weakened team, it's basically telling them that every worst fear they have about their own abilities is true. And it actually, whereas some football clubs would be emboldened going, here's our chance here. They go, oh God, we're so bad that he won't even play as good players against us. You know, like Pedro Quiroga sat rubbing his hands in anticipation, waiting for the call up. So I agree with Chris's point. I think for me, the Merseyside derby, but actually the Bournemouth League Cup game, which is sort of in the middle of this, it will totally depend on what we're trying to do. And they might be the Bournemouth in particular might be the thing that's the stumbling block to winning all seven, because what team do you put out for that game?
Yeah, quite possibly. Before go, I just want to say nice use of needle a moment ago, Chris, when we just talked about tattoos. That was really well done.
But
absolutely right. It never ceases to amaze me, really, the disrespect that Jürgen Klopp has sort of placed on the derby since his arrival in terms of the teams he's put out. It shocked me almost every time. The FA Cup one, when obviously Curtis Jones gets that win of that team, was just ridiculous. Like, who was it? Lerucci started at left back? and people we've just never seen. Nat Phillips came back from Stuttgart for a game and then went back to Germany. It's just outrageous what he's done in the past, and he's continued to do that. And
Solanke led the line once.
Just nuts teams. Like, yeah, you constantly start Origi, apart from the one where he comes off the bench and scores the winner, of course. But yeah, I think in terms of what's coming next, it will be interesting. And it is a friendly looking sort of set of fixtures before the next international break, of course. The half 12 thing is definitely a thing. The fact that it's a derby adds a little bit of extra spice to it, of course. But there's a couple of enforced changes in terms of, we're not quite sure whether Gakpo will be ready for this weekend and stuff like that. And obviously the Robertson injury layoff is going to mean we're going to see a lot of Tsimikas. But again, it's a kind set of fixtures to see Tsimikas in for me. So yeah, it's all sort of stacked in Liverpool's favour for a little while, and it will be interesting to see how Klopp goes about the rotation and that. But I think the League Cup game with Bournemouth, and the fact it's Toulouse as a double header, and the fact it's obviously the Europa League, that again means that you can afford to rest and rotate and be clever with what you've got. And we've got five attacking options when Gakpo is back, and we've been relatively lucky and fortunate, it looks like, with his sort of prognosis and how long he's going to be out. So yeah, I'm extremely confident heading into this next set of games, because I see no reason whereby we can't come out of this with an absolutely unblemished perfect record.
I've got one major question for anyone who's watching live on YouTube for us. What do you think Dan's drink is? Don't tell them. I want to get some answers in the comments here, because I've got to be honest with you, I've got no fucking idea.
Nobody gets it.
It looks like peach juice or something mental.
I reckon it's high in electrolytes.
It smells really good.
Nobody answers that right. I think it looks like, you know, when you're at a dentist and you have to take a drink and it just falls out.
And it's in the same, cup as well.
It's really nice, by the way. But if anyone gets it right, then
it looks like the colour stuff they use now to advertise sanitary pads, to be honest. But we'll move on from that.
Tastes like it.
Is it a prime?
No, it's not a prime.
It's his little sachets.
Before we crack on to how optimistic we feel, I thought it'd be an interesting thought experiment or memory experiment. Who can remember the starting 11 from that FA Cup game? So, of course, Curtis Jones scores the winning goal.
Yeah.
Can you go on? Should we have a bash at trying to name the starting 11? Well, let's start with the goalkeeper. Rather than just name a random players.
It's the only one that came to me head at the time.
It was in net. Wasn't Keevan. Wasn't too nope. young. It couldn't have been him.
This is of course January 2018.
Yeah, I went. I was there.
Mignolet.
No.
So Karius.
Wasn't Karius either. Don't think.
Who else did we? Brad Jones. When did he leave?
Wasn't him. Well, he's well gone.
I mean, actually, the BBC website have got this very wrong, because they've got the same goalie, I think, on the bench, as in there. I can't be right. I'm gonna verify this. Carry on.
LFChistory.net.
Yeah, LFChistory.net.
Who else was knocking around? It can't have been Ali, can it? Who else was knocking around?
The one who went to Leicester.
Danny Ward. Wasn't him.
Well, this is what I'm getting verified, because I can't see how. I mean, it's definitely not the player that the BBC website have got on, so I'm just going to quickly.
No, it's Kasper Schmeichel or something. You're very confident that it wasn't.
The other is Adrian, and Adrian didn't join us until
the year we won the league. That Norwich game when Alisson got hurt.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just going to double check that. Go on, go through some of the. Who was right back?
Was Joey Gomez in our first team?
Joe Gomez was in the team. Yeah, correct.
Did Phillips start? Then he's at the right back.
I think I'm pretty sure that Phillips did start that one.
And he was actually there on the day, maybe on the bench. Klein,
I tell I lie. It was actually. Oh no, wait
there. Klein with us still at that Trent? Point.
Klein would have been around. He played against United, didn't he? That one London game.
I'm not convinced that this is the team now that I'm looking at it. I'm sorry,
so confused.
I've confused myself. Let's move on.
great segment, Paul.
Great segment. Fully prepared.
I need to know though.
No, that's not okay.
Great TV, this boys.
Yep.
Good process.
And even better. It's even better there. Radio. Robinson, someone's guessing in the comments.
Jack Robinson.
No, the drink.
Well gone. No, it's not Robinson's. That's summer food somebody for that,
really. No, but that's what I've got over there.
Okay. You know what? Everyone's letting me down here, mainly me. 5th of January 2018, right? That was when it was.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
Van Dijk, didn't he?
I don't know when it was.
Was that Van Dijk's debut?
That was Van Dijk's debut. A couple of years after that.
The 5th of January 2018.
Curtis Jones winner. No, it was after that.
Was it after that?
Yeah. Van Dijk scored Van Dijk in that game.
Because he joined. It was the 6th of January 2020.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Well, that makes more...
Yeah.
Because that was the one...
Yeah, that idiot BBC. The idiot to BBC.
Yeah. So, Adrian in goal.
Okay.
Wow. I really remember that as being... I'm thinking of the... Of a completely different game of football.
Yeah, we know.
Van Dijk had it.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure if Curtis Jones started that game, did he?
No, he started this game. Jesus Christ.
It's not that the game. One you were talking about.
Clarify, what game are we actually talking about?
You've done a Chris Pager.
2020.
2020 Curtis Jones winner.
2020. Polish? Right, okay, Shans.
In goal.
Adrian.
Adrian, shock. Right back.
Have we said him?
I can't remember. You've said a lot of things, and I've been looking through 15 web pages trying to verify my own stupidity here. Joe Gomez played, but did not play right back. He played centre back alongside Nat Phillips.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So
left back was
Lerucci.
Milner. No, Lerucci was the other one. Was the other one? I think.
Oh, was he?
Milner, left back.
Okay.
Right back.
A Dutch lad.
No. Keanu Hoover. No.
Keanu Hoover. Now he played in Wolves in the FA Cup.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, same. This is Klein.
Nope.
Trent.
Nope. Therefore.
Nico Williams.
Oh.
Defensive midfielder, we've said him already.
Who's that? Trevea. Yeah.
Flanked by Curtis Jones.
Yeah.
What shirt number was Curtis Jones wearing? 48. Adam Lallana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The front three.
Harvey Elliott. I knew he started. I was really excited to watch him.
It's a Merseyside derby.
Divock
Origi.
Shaqiri?
No. A lot of love for Shane Shaqiri.
Yeah. That's Luis Diaz.
Tacky?
No.
Tacky Minamino. Well done, Chris Pajak.
Well done. Good shout.
Side eye there. Just got it.
That squad beat everyone.
I didn't touch it, though.
Bench, Marley Henderson, Oxley Chamberlain, Rian Brewster, Keanu Hoover, Quevin Kelleher. And Yasser Lerucci.
I knew he was around. I absolutely was convinced Lerucci was knocking around that day. Did Milner go off injured?
That's entirely possible.
What's your juice?
Oh, it is a little sachet with like vitamins and stuff. And I think it's like elderberry and raspberry flavour.
Oh, God.
Rhubarb juice, guest pear, plue.
Good guess.
It's got a bit of a rhubarb juice vibe to it. We should have just got someone tattooed here, shouldn't we? Fucking hell.
I'm up for it, like.
I think we've got an opportunity here, Chloe, with these running games. It's kind of the reason behind the title of this. We could be qualified from the group. You win your games against Toulouse back-to-back. That puts you on 12 points, which should be comfortably through by that point. Four league wins. I would be amazed if the other clubs who are in top four are able to, if all of them are able to match that. So we should be in a healthy position in that regard. And again, it boils down to the League Cup then and how arsed we are. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the League Cup's a big thing because to the likes of Spurs and that, they just want to win a trophy. And I'm not having that. They all believe that they're going to win the Premier League. So for them, they might go stronger than Liverpool do, and that could hurt them for other games in and around that time. But yeah, it's a nice run of fixtures after a really tough start for Liverpool. And to say we're 3 points off top after playing some really big teams away from home, I've really missed the Reds, and I'm happy that they're coming back. It's that simple. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to enjoy it. The Everton game, obviously it being a 12:30 kickoff and most of our players being all across the world, is a little bit of a worry. Not the opposition, but more so the fact that everyone is just dotted around the world, and some of them don't come back till late. Obviously, the South Americans. Brentford is another one where Brentford seem to have kind of sorted us out a little bit. They know how to bully us. The big from set pieces, but the rest of those teams, I really like the look of them, and a lot of them are at home as well, which is a big thing.
I think that is important, isn't it, Dan? Because I looked at that and went, people are making light of this. But we've dropped points to all of those teams in recent times. It's all been away from home.
Yeah.
And that's where it is a different test. Nottingham Forest, there's revenge to be done at the City Ground there. There's revenge at whatever the hell Brentford are calling their stadium these days. There's a bit to be done in the derby. But at home, that should work to our favour.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, it plays into our favour. In terms of sort of on paper, in terms of who we're up against and the opponents, the kind fixtures, and then you add in the fact that a lot of them are at Anfield, and it really couldn't have been much kinder. Just on the League Cup, I think we will heavily rotate, but I think Bournemouth might have to rotate as well, because they're looking over the shoulders of relegation, so their priorities are different. Like you mentioned Tottenham there, and they will be after silverware. Bournemouth will look at this and go, see, it's a bit of a distraction really, and a bit in the way as opposed to what they want. So I think it'd be two rotated sides going head to head, and in that instance we should win that game. So again I see no reason why we can't be clever with what we do over the next few weeks while continuing to win football matches. And you can almost, we haven't done it enough this season, in my opinion, sort of getting the ascendancy and getting the box seat and have it all wrapped up nicely in a bow by the 60-minute mark, and then you can take your lads off. We've not done that anywhere near enough. But this set of fixtures coming up, and the fact that Anfield and all that sort of stuff, does suggest to me that there are opportunities to go, right, that game's done by the hour mark, get the lads off and rest them.
I think we'll go a little bit stronger than normal in the Bournemouth game, to be honest. I think that draw is kind of opening up to us anyway. Is it United, Newcastle?
Well,
I've
got
that one of the big fixtures.
There's the round of 16 fixtures. So
Arsenal, West Ham's obviously massive. Blackburn are going to knock Chelsea out. Burnley will knock Everton out. Man United play Newcastle. So it kind of opens up for us. But I think, moreover, I don't think any of the games we've played so far this season, he's gone as weak as people have thought going into those games.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And he's building Liverpool 2.0, you know, he's coined that himself. And what better way to get everybody on board with something than winning a trophy early doors? And the fact that it is in, well, is it February now or late January, whatever, it can just give everyone that we're on the right track. Because I don't think Jürgen truly believes that we're ready to win the Premier League this season yet. He'll be really happy with the promise that they've shown and everything else. And, you know, maybe he secretly thinks there's a chance there. But you've got, we know winning breeds winning. So why don't you just get everybody on board and be like, you know, Gravenberch, McAllister, the Sobers, like, this is what it takes to win at Liverpool Football Club. Let's make sure that we don't lose our one opportunity of getting some silverware first thing.
There's definitely this thing of, because the quadruple challenge season is obviously falls flat on its face, as we well know, but we're all, you know, happy to come away with the two domestic cups that year, but they felt like consolation prizes almost, and they can often mark the end of a club's spell where, okay, you can't challenge for the big honours anymore, so your manager will go and hoover a bit. Wenger famously did that with Arsenal, couldn't get near the league, go and grab a few FA Cups and keep the good vibes going. Whereas actually this, you know, if we'd not done a rebuild, that would feel a bit more like this, you know. And I don't think anyone would be arsed if you look at the end of Klopp's reign and you can put all the trophies out in front of him that he's won, and there's two or three FA Cups and a couple of League Cups or whatever on there, great. But if you do it with a new team, it feels like you're saying there, it's priming them for what comes next. It's like, it's rubber banding back up to being on top. It's not seen as so like, oh, well, we can't get anything else, so we're going to go for this. It's like, okay, well, we're maybe not ready for everything else, as you say, so let's teach it. Because that winning mentality is, it's impossible to teach. You can train around it, and you can give people experience, you know, the benefits of experience from experienced players. But all of a sudden, they've got that squad, they've been through the forge of going and winning a piece of silver, and they've got that moment. Then hopefully that lights a touch paper and moves forward. So I like the notion of it, but when you come to play Bournemouth in that midweek, it inevitably it's going to be dependent on who's there, who's fit, who's available. It's just an awkward game. The Toulouse stuff picks, it's fine, because it's like, it's your business, so you get to go and do your travel and all that kind of thing.
I think he, you know, early doors, of course, but I think he's more likely to rotate in that game because you're not getting knocked out then and there. That's the crux of it, isn't it? You get knocked out against Bournemouth and that's done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas you can kind of rotate in Toulouse knowing that you've still got another couple of games to sort your problems out.
That's an interesting point. But ultimately, again, it's like we've seen in the last week or two, you get a couple of injuries and a couple of suspensions, and then you've got a decision between your front line being, you've only got Diaz, Nunes and Salah fit. You've then got that thing of like, well, how many of them are starting in the midweek? And that's when, you know, I guess it's a challenge for someone like Ben Doak or whatever to step up. But yeah, it's too early to predict exactly how it'll go. But I agree, there's no reason why Liverpool can't make a good fist of it. I was trying to get up the dates for the rest of the EFL Cup. And give us a second, I will find them, because I always go this time every year. We normally get through that first round at least, and we're going, okay, cool. When you get through, and we get through the next one, and then you realise when they
it's
get
like
played.
January, isn't it,
mate? Well, it's always there's always like a two-legged semi-final in the middle of January.
There's always Southampton with Southampton in the middle.
Yeah,
and we didn't score a goal for three games.
So the third round, as we've just seen, was the week commencing the 25th. This round four coming up is the week commencing the 30th of October. Quarterfinals, yep, the week commencing the 18th of December, because yeah, we've been there before.
Yeah, we came back off the World Cup to a League Cup game, didn't we?
Yeah. That got moved. City. Got moved to after Christmas this time, whereas we've had this. This is where we add into the, all the problems with the Club World Cup and all that. It's always that, like the week leading up to the week leading up to Christmas. Yep. Semi-final first leg.
We had a nice sing song.
Week of the 8th. And second leg's week of the 21st of January. Yeah. It, when you're in it, I'm always like, yeah, go ahead. Go for it. When we're out, I go, that's the bullet there. Imagine playing those stupid two-legged semi-finals in January instead of having a week off to recuperate. We'll see. We'll see how well it opens up, but I'm not against it. I like going to Wembley and winning stuff. I'd like more of that. Let's circle back to the derby then, Clo. They are rubbish, and they've been rubbish at Anfield for the longest of times. Dyche hasn't actually got the worst record at Anfield. It's not a great
record.
That
belongs to Moyes, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. obviously, he was the Burnley manager that beat us during the COVID season and what have you. He's picked up a couple of draws and stuff there and thereabouts. It would be nice for this to be one of those games where, you know, they're never far from teetering from the brink of absolute catastrophe. They've been playing or trying to play more football than I would expect from a Sean Dyche side. He's never lost to us by more than two goals. Do you think this could be the game where that happens?
I don't know. It depends if he changes his tactics, because it's a derby. You can't just come here and expect to play this boss football. And look, I think they've been decent so far this season. I think Fulham and Wolves, they should have won those games. And it looks brilliant from their perspective up until you've got someone who needs to put it in the back of the net. And at the very start, when they had Neil Maupay up top, They weren't scoring goals to win the games. Now it seems that they're starting to score goals. And I think they can cause a couple of problems to Liverpool. But it is, if you come at us, you are leaving space and you're helping us out. We'd rather you come and attack us and us pick you apart than you sit 11 men behind the ball and frustrate us. But I think Liverpool have a different mentality, and I think they can face both versions of what I know of Sean Dyche, the new one, and the one that he had at Burnley, where he did cause us problems from time to time. So, I don't know. I never like being too overconfident with derbies, because it is still a derby. No matter how crap they are, I will still always fear the idea of losing to them because of how crap they are and how embarrassing that totally is. But on top of that, I'd love, like, they're going to do fine this season. They're going to escape relegation once again because teams are just somehow worse, and that I can't explain how lucky they've been in the last two, three seasons. And they'll be fine, but it'd be good after, you know, a decent run of form from their perspective, for them to come and believe they have a chance against Liverpool, and for Liverpool to just mop the floor with them. That'd be boss.
I don't think it will be more than two goals, for what it's worth. Like,
yeah.
It always seems like it's really tough to get a win. I think we've won three of the last five. Maybe we drew 1-0 in there, and then obviously the one that they won during COVID and stuff. But
the other one was when Virgil van Dijk nearly lost a leg.
They just seem to always make it difficult for us, and we always seem to struggle against them in those games for whatever reason it is, to sort of create and stuff. Even like, you know, you think about the last game, I think it was Cody Gakpo's first goal for us, wasn't it? What a brilliant counter attack it was, and you know, we very nearly conceded a goal, and it was only for Darwin Nunes basically legging the full length of the pitch and getting the assist for Mo Salah that really we were able to then get on top in that game. So I think, you know, 2-0, I'd take 2-0 now. And yeah. I'd be quite happy and comfortable with 2-0, but I'd be surprised if it was more
Yeah, it needs to just be a run-of-the-mill game. That's the point about this upcoming set of fixtures. I'm here, by the way, for Liverpool, you know, smashing aside all of Sunderland and doing whatever, doing all that kind of stuff. But actually, I want us to start being ruthless. I'd like us to just have some functional 2-0 wins, 2-0, you know, a bit more
don't
like
really don't go 1-0 down.
Well, yeah, that would help measurably. Like, but you know, that you know, I can't remember how the game went.
3-1 is like that though against them.
Yeah.
Just to give them the hope and then take it away.
I could do with a break with them. I'll be honest with you.
After this game, yeah, I'm fine.
Well, I could do with a little. I'm ready for Liverpool to flex their muscles by this point now of this season. Like, I've seen glimpses of what we're about, but I haven't seen it in sort of full flow yet. I'm ready for Liverpool. It can be at the weekend if it wants to be against Everton, that'd be absolutely fine. But in this sort of upcoming 6-week spell, I'm ready to see us really say, okay, you've seen a little bit of what we're about now look at this. That's where I see us. And I think people are just starting to sort of take us seriously again in terms of like title talk and trophy talk and whatever. So people from outside the Liverpool circles, obviously, because we've always thought that was the case. But yeah, I would really want us now to do a couple of run-of-mill wins whereby it's just dead easy and it's dead straightforward and the game's done and dusted, like I say. But I do want us to just say, look what we're really about, and your Szoboszlai, your Salah, your Nunez, just have a field day against someone.
Yeah, and look, no one's going to turn that down, are they? But I think there's, and we're going to do more on the other top four teams on the Bias Football podcast, which follows this on Redmen Plus, because I think it's important to put us into context. It's not just us, it's obviously how the other teams are doing, but there's something to us just being a bit boring. And I mean by, we can enjoy the games, of course, we'll enjoy the wins, but I just get in a string of just absolutely fine but not extraordinary wins. 1-0s, 2-0s, shutouts, clean sheets. Jumping on this, but it's because I think someone like Spurs, they're flying by the seat of the pants, they're having great, loads of great fun. Us just go just to be, you know, there's not even a sniff of, oh, Liverpool might drop something here. I'd like us to kind of put those foundations in.
It's like with Manchester City where you see them win and it's like, it's boring now. Like, can't be bothered with it. And if Liverpool can become that team where everyone around us looks and sees Liverpool 1-0 up, can't be bothered. Like, like that's what you kind of want.
Yeah.
And I get so bored with Manchester City because it's the same. They're just a machine up until that Arsenal game, obviously.
Until Rodri's suspension.
Yes. I hope Liverpool can do that, but also I think the Everton game is extremely important to the next set of fixtures because this is to set the tempo. We've had two games, one where it's just not gone our way and like there's not, and you can't blame the lads for that. We've had been quite unlucky in that game, but then another game where, you know, Brighton were coming off like a 6-1 loss against Villa. They'd managed to claw it back in the Europa League and you expected Liverpool to put a stamp on that game, and instead we kind of looked a shell of ourselves. We looked a little bit scared to go to the Amex Stadium and face Brighton. So I think we need 3 points out of the Everton game. You can't play the occasion, and we've got a new set of lads in there who might just do that. You've really got to hope that they don't play the occasion and treat it as any other game. Let the fans do that. The atmosphere will speak for itself. You can thrive yourself off that. But I think it's very important because if we come out of that game and we've dropped points, I think we all sit here and we think, should have beat them. Look at where they are on the table. They've got to look at who they've got on the pitch. Look at who we've got on the pitch. Look at the teams around us and who they're facing. So I think Liverpool need 3 points out of that.
Yeah.
That
I think part of Jurgen Klopp's strategy of just playing shitter sides against Everton has always been to take the occasion out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, you put your best side out and you almost acknowledge that this is a different game. Whereas he just looks at them and goes, this shit, so I'm not going to play my starting 11.
Yeah.
And then it almost just takes the legs out of it straight away.
If I was playing any other team who was 15th, 16th in the league, I would treat them as such. I'm not treating this like it's Man City just because it's the Merseyside derby.
Yeah, and that's, I think it's always, that's why he's done it essentially. And I think going back onto your points, I think it's right. I think, you know, a couple of just sort of 2-0 wins, no headlines, don't want Liverpool over the back of the papers, don't want journalists talking about, don't want to talk about VAR, just want Liverpool to rack up 3 points and 3 points and 3 points and stop letting teams think that they can score against us and the game's going to descend into a madness of some kind that Liverpool have to claw themselves out of, or it doesn't go against us. We just need to win and just keep winning and winning and winning. That's what we did when we won the league.
Yeah.
Man, it was just like, you know, there were, it was punctuated by those mental ones, of course, but for the most part, we didn't play great. We won loads of games.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. You just find it's the title winning form, sort of the cliche, isn't it? The thing for me on this run of games is that while none of these, and the big challenge that comes with this is a really odd one to say for people who maybe don't, you know, haven't been to Anfield loads, but it's the fact that there aren't any headline, and the derby would notwithstand, the atmosphere will be amazing at the weekend. But it's those bunch of teams where there's an expectation that you're going to win, and how do you G yourself up? So it's not going to be a cauldron for the, you know, all but the Merseyside derby of the Anfield games there. So it's on the team actually to go and put the performance in on the pitch, go and give the people something to cheer about.
It's unfortunate, but that's right.
Yeah, it's just how football. It's how football.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love it to be the other way around, where every single game, the ground is completely made up to be there and they're singing loud and that. But unfortunately, football has changed, and maybe people misremember it anyway. You do need the team in these games, and hopefully they're able to put it.
I saw a great conversation about this off the back of people talking about one of the games in midweek. I think it might have been the League Cup game or something. In fact, no, it was the last game for the international. Anyway, the most recent game in Anfield, and it was we were going, oh, the atmosphere this, the atmosphere that, and I saw a couple of lads going, pointing out matches from the past where in those equivalent games you get like 20,000 people in Anfield, mm-hmm. whereas we sell out, but the atmosphere is not great. So you're right, people definitely misremember that it was always this like bear pit atmosphere in Anfield. It wasn't. It's only under Jürgen Klopp that it's even half decent in those games. It comes from an expectation of winning. So when we've got something to fight against, the atmosphere is always bigger because you feel like you're fronting up their team, you're fronting up their fans. That's why we're great in your big European occasions, because there's an extra added pride to it all. But it's almost a bit like, it's a bit, when you think you're really good and you play a team that you don't think is as good, there's a bit of an embarrassment in like rubbing it in their faces somehow, that like, you know, it's weird. But that's another stupid psychological hurdle this team's going to have to overcome. It's great when everyone's behind you, but when you're the ones you've got to drag the fans along with you, that's an extra 10% that needs to come into your game.
That'll also improve though if Liverpool are in title race. 18-19. Even though we all thought we were a great football team, I don't think anyone thought we could challenge Manchester City for the title. And it turns out we did. We took them to the brink. I think we all thought in a two-legged Champions League game, yeah, we could have them here. But in the league, over the course of the amount of games you had to play and how much they were just a robot at it, I don't think Liverpool fans truly believed we could. And I think it's maybe a little bit like, I think no one expected us to be a title challenge inside this season. We hoped for it, and maybe we at least hoped to be back in the top four, second place maybe. But I don't think anyone's thought that, you know, we could really go toe-to-toe. And the more that the players start getting you to believe that and putting in the performances, the more Bournemouth at home is, oh my God, we need to get behind the car, because we need to keep on the toes of Arsenal, of Spurs at the moment, of Manchester City. So if the players can drag the fans through the games at the start of the season, where it's a bit like meh and you just expect to win, later on in the season, if you're in a title race, that's when you realise how important
this
it
is. Just part of the foundations of building a successful season, isn't it? You know what I mean? You've got to go through these bits where we always call it in our work, like we're entering the grind period now. When you get through the initial opening optimism of the new season, all of a sudden you're playing two games a week and it actually becomes a bit like where it never stops. There's always something, it's always the next game, move on, two games a week. And then you get into November, December, you get that, then it's December comes in, you've also got Christmas, so that's great. You've got the little respite of the start to get some transfer rumours back in again. But this is the period where you just play football. You just play football twice a week, and you've got to win twice a week to be able to kind of, or less so in Europe because you can afford to drop points there, but you just got to put a good run together. And I think it's actually typified this year by the fact that we've got City after the next international break.
What time kickoff?
If you had to guess, if you don't know what time Liverpool are playing Manchester City after an international break, have a guess in the comments section with us.
Well done, you all got that right.
Yeah, you all got that right, yeah. I like the fact that, you know, all things Chloe sort of said there, and what we've been talking about so far, these aren't headline games of football, apart from the Merseyside derby. But you've got City at the end, and if you want that game to matter, then these games have to matter in the build-up.
Well, listen, when we were having the discussion then about the atmosphere and stuff, I couldn't help but think if we were top, it would be completely different, because we'd have something to lose. You know, and if we can get to the end of this seven games and we are maybe top of the league table, then everything is just ramped up. Mm-hmm. And that's when Liverpool are at the best under Jurgen Klopp, isn't it? And when we're, as fans, probably at our best, when we've got something to lose, someone's out to take something off us, yeah, type of a thing, that's brilliant, isn't it? So if we can get Manchester City and we're top of the table and we can make it a 6-point gap or something like that, I mean, that's the type of stuff that you live for as a fan, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely agree on that one. I want that City game to mean something, you know, because it's every time we've been in a title race and the time that we won the title, that game was vitally important. And like at the moment, I think Guardiola thinks it's the Arsenal game. And that was evidenced by how he approached that game the other week. And it fell flat, you know, deflected goal. He gets a bit unlucky with it, of course, but he only ever plays like that. He plays a more defensive brand of football when he knows that he's strategically building a title win when he does that. And often we see him come to Anfield and do the same. I want that. I want him to come and show us too much respect, because you know we're breathing right down the neck of the you know whoever's top of the league at that point. But you know we're seven, you know, okay, four league, but we're a good stretch of football away from that. What I want from all of this is Liverpool to have this in as much of their hands as possible by the time we get there, because it is interesting, because we forget sometimes that all these other teams have got football games to play as well. And yeah, we're going to be doing a deeper dive. Not a deep dive, that's a different show, this guy as well. We're going to be doing a deeper, I'm going to have a more in-depth look at the fixtures in this run for all of those other top four teams as well over on the Bias Football Podcast. You can come and join us over there pretty about 10-15 minutes after we finish this. We'll be live on redmanplus.com. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have a little chat around the director of football and just the general sense that maybe Liverpool as a football club might be stabilising a little bit. Right, after this break.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Yes, grab yourself a Redmen Christmas jumper while you can. Very limited edition. Head to redmenmerch.com and get involved. And people have started to arrive. Is that right?
They have. Yeah, I've seen a few people saying they've got theirs and they are delighted, as you would be naturally.
The quality is absolutely brilliant. Like, they are brilliant. And if you are like wondering about it, thinking about your Christmas party and stuff, and you're not maybe in the UK, or even if you're in the UK, get it sorted now. We know it's ridiculously early, but like, let's say you're in America and it arrives and it doesn't quite fit. You need time to be able to do that exchange, don't you? So we are thinking of you. Get your order in now and we'll be able to sort you out.
If you think it's ridiculously early now, bear in mind it's been like 2 weeks we've been selling these. So it's not as ridiculously early now as it was 2 weeks. So when that's gone like a flash,
it'll be Christmas from 2 weeks ago, not us today.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it'll be Christmas before you know.
When can me and Dan come in on ours? When is it acceptable?
I guess it's up to us, really.
You can literally wear it whenever you want, Chloe. I can't say we won't like, go, what the fuck are you doing? Walking around in a Christmas jumper in October. But
I mean, the sun is blinding me through the windows. So I think it might be
It has been the first cold, proper cold day today, though. So, yeah, it's still in his shorts, of course. Steve and Dan both rock up in shorts today.
Mental.
Fair enough.
State of mind.
Let's do football director stuff. Dan, you've probably got your finger on the pulse of this more than most. We saw Max Eberl.
Abel.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Former Leipzig DOF linked with the role. The Athletic have said that senior Anfield figures have played down reports that he's considering the job. Where are you at with this?
Yeah, I was really excited by the Abel stuff last week. He would be very high on the list of candidates that I would like to see come in and do the job at Liverpool. I really want a new long-term sporting director of football at Liverpool, because as much as the article you're touching upon there points to the good job Schmeichel did over the summer, explains some of the sort of ill-fated transfer sagas, if you like, and says it wasn't really his fault, which I'm understanding. But for me, it's more the fact that we know Schmeichel is going to walk away from this in the not-too-distant future. So we need the guy. We need the Michael Edwards. We need what Julian Ward was supposed to be. We need the one who's going to be the long-term figurehead who can sort of bring it all together and be Jurgen Klopp's sort of right-hand man in the transfer department and the one he trusts, much like Michael Edwards was. And Abel felt like a good fit. He left Leipzig under a bit of a cloud because basically Leipzig said to him, he's only been there about 12 months, said, you need to commit your long-term future to us, because there was links to Liverpool, there was links to Bayern Munich, and he said, I can't do that, sorry. So off he went. He's been at Borussia Mönchengladbach for like over a decade, done a really good job there. So Abel made a lot of sense. Paul Mitchell is another one who makes a lot of sense, albeit a Mancunian.
And being linked with the Manchester.
And is now being heavily linked to the Manchester United job, yeah. So those two perhaps not on the cards, but I just think, like I say, we need the guy. The guy who's going to be here for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it may be. And I don't think that's Schmeichel. So that's where I'm at with it, really.
It's funny, isn't it? Because the Athletic stuff feels, it's written by James Pearce. We know James very well. So he gets a lot of this, like, oh, mouthpiece for blah, 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 blah. It's not. But it was quite interesting to hear. I've honestly not thought about Jörg Schmeichel since the transfer windows closed, Chris. But there was a point a month before it closed where everyone was going, who the fuck is this guy and what the fuck is he meant to be doing? So I'd not really considered whether Liverpool had a good transfer window, really, or not. We just started the season well. We've got some good players, sure, but I didn't really thought about who was responsible or whatever. But the article goes to not great lengths, but it does kind of highlight, well, you know, we signed 3 lads from the Bundesliga, so, you know, which is where he'd effectively come from. So he's definitely had a hand in that. But Dan's not wrong. Also, this is a guy we've brought out of retirement. No one's quite certain exactly what his role is within the club. And there's also an issue here where the longer we get this runs, the closer you end up in a very similar situation to this summer, where the end of the season's reached, the big important summer transfer window hits, and who's actually in charge of bringing the players in?
It depends what the role is, to be honest with you, before you get into it, because obviously I think that role has probably changed from only a couple of years ago where Michael Edwards was doing it to what George Schmeichel is doing now, because it feels like, and I think a lot of people have talked about this, how Jürgen's had a little bit more influence on things. Now, it feels like this is just the negotiator's role. And to be honest with you, I kind of think that anybody can negotiate it if they're a good negotiator.
Yeah.
But what we're asking for with Max, for example, is to come in and run the whole operation. And that might not be what Liverpool are looking for anymore. It might be someone to interpret the data, get the needs of Jürgen Klopp and go out and negotiate on that type of a basis. And you might not need a director of football in the right way. I'm very much with Dan on this, by the way. I do think we need to go back and excuse me, roll to the Michael Edwards type of a role where, you know, it's sort of, if Jürgen walks away in 2026, you're in a much better position for the future of the football club. If Jürgen signs next week until 2028, 2029, then you might want a bit more of a negotiator to be in there. So there's clarity needed for me before I can make a decision on who the best person is for the role, because the role's different now.
It's intimated in that, Chloe, that ultimately, we've always known Klopp's the guy who has the final say, but it was phrased more this way of like Klopp gets the players that he wants, which does sort of, and that might just be how it's written, not how it's meant, but to Chris's point, it feels like Jürgen's got a little bit more power at the moment. And like, again, that's kind of right, is that when Jürgen moves on, that might be the chance to push the reset button and go back to young coach, experienced DOF, and then you can kind of put a solid system in place. But right now, they need to find someone who works perfectly with Jurgen Klopp, because there's no point in upsetting what does work at the football club.
Yeah, it's hard because I want stability, and stability for me makes more sense to go with, you know, what Dan and Chris would prefer. But obviously by doing that, are you upsetting the chemistry between what Jurgen Klopp wants and how he likes to operate? And Jurgen Klopp is a very demanding coach, I'd imagine. We've seen him with previous players. We don't just go and buy second bests. If there's someone that Jurgen wants, he'll wait for them. And we've kind of seen it now with a DM. We went in for the best one that there is, and then we had to kind of, because we'd acted a bit too fast, now we've got a stopgap, and now it's who's next. But yeah, when Dan gets excited enough to skip on the way to the shop, that is when it got me a little bit excited.
You skipped and got thrown under the bus with that one. Well done.
I'm happy to admit it. I'd have said it myself if you didn't. I really wanted Abel. I did. I think his record in Germany is outstanding, and he's just the type of guy, because he's not Edwards 2.0, yeah, and he's not Jörg Schmadtke. He sits right in that sweet spot in the middle whereby he could work with Klopp, he could get the deals done, and he understands the data side of things. So if you've got Will Spearman and people like that in the background, he could work sort of, he could oversee all of that perfectly. Whereas Schmadtke, to me, is just a deal guy. He goes into the room, gets a deal done. He doesn't understand the numbers and all that type of stuff that's going on. He leaves that to completely different people. But I just think we need this sort of overseeing, perfect fit. You can just sort of bring everything together. And that is Max Abel, personally.
The other thing is like, I saw a couple of people on Twitter, and I think it might have been David who wrote Dave a Conference, piece. Yeah. And it was something that someone questioned him and was like, he's doing this in the Bundesliga. He's picking out like great players, sure, but you're under a lot of pressure for those players to become gems at Liverpool. And what he basically said was that you're picking out players for the future and under the likes of Jurgen Klopp. Yeah, there's a lot of pressure, but you're getting these stars into us to begin with, and to develop them at a massive football club where at the moment they will get chances. So yeah, I think his track record is much better than Schmadtke's, and I'd like to see him be at the top of Liverpool sporting director place, but I'm not actually sure how likely that is to happen anymore, because it seems like you've lost your excitement a little bit, and I go based off that.
Yeah, it's interesting to know, you were kind of saying that, Chris, like what is the role, what are you doing, what are you coming in for? Because that's an interesting point, is that Liverpool, I think people look at this a lot and go, I saw people saying we paid off like £200 million to effectively Red Bull teams for a variety of their players over the years, who they bought in for a fraction of that price. This is, you know, if we can get this guy, can do that for us. It doesn't quite work that way at Liverpool, no. Because we actually don't need to go and buy the 500,000, 2.5 million, 3 million players. We do need them a little bit further along, a bit more.
But that's because of the way that the club's run. Ultimately, like we've got a guy, what does Fallows do?
Chief scout.
Who's the guy who runs like the not just the under-23s, but where they go on loan and head of loans and all that? Like if we had a big partnership, and who is it?
Barry Hunter. Maybe, yeah.
So if we had someone who's in charge, and really like you almost grow Liverpool's operations in that regard, mm-hmm. You get more second clubs, third clubs type of thing, like the Red Bull group. You know, ultimately there's fed in from, you know, Austria to Germany, and then they blow up and go to play, you know, places like Liverpool, Bayern Munich, et cetera, et cetera. Chelsea have always, I thought, done it quite well for England, where they hoover up all the young talent. They go out on loan, they make loads of money off their younger players. We've never really got our arms around that. Now, if you're looking for somebody to do that, where Liverpool can get that sort of £500,000 player and develop them under their umbrella over the course of 4 or 5 years before they hit the Reds, the actual Liverpool team, then that's brilliant. But that's a completely different, it's a complete pivot on what we've been doing. So you might need somebody like Bax who's able to understand that, et cetera, et cetera. But that's a whole side of the club that we don't have at the moment, I don't think, anyway.
There's obviously Liverpool do buy young players, don't they? You know what I mean? We've actually, one thing that's been consistent, well, everyone's been going, Liverpool don't invest, don't buy players. We've consistently bought under 18s mm-hmm. throughout this whole sort of period. Obviously, Doak's one of the most current ones, but Kate Gordon was another recent example, and so on. It's just interesting to know, like, what is your what is your job? How much of it is scouting? How much of it is data? How much of it is just operating a team? How much of it is negotiations? You know, what does your actual, you know, what does your actual job look like? And it's funny because with Michael Edwards, it was a harder job because you've got to do the climb, but it's much easier when there's lots of problems to solve and you're inventing solutions as you go along. Whereas Liverpool should have all the systems in place and actually, you could probably just do with a plug and play guy who's just very good at overseeing as a variety of expertise or whatever. But this goes back to it. We don't really understand the role to the point I've just found out Liverpool director of loan management is called David Woodfine. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Who confirmed his exit according to this article this summer on the 15th of May this year. So I've no idea.
But if you want those 18-year-olds to develop properly, like, and I'm talking like, you know, not the punts, like the ones where it's Haaland or something like that, then you need somebody like that in place who's going to manage that side of things.
I think Liverpool need a series of feed the clubs if we're going to ever to be like that, aren't we? You know, because that loan market is so volatile in how we do things. It'd be nice to have that connection. You don't know, but that might come down. I think that's a different conversation for a different day. But it will be, I don't know if a Mike, what, I don't know. Yeah, is it another Michael Edwards we're looking for? Or is it someone who's got a different skill set? It might just be a contact book thing because it's not about going out and finding 18-year-olds because we've got scouts and we've got data analysts who can tell you whether they are worth scouting or not. But actually someone who just knows how to talk to the Leipzig, you know, to the Red Bull group, or has got, you know, knows other director of football from other clubs and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we, I guess we can't know. But what it leads on to is, and it's the general sense I got from Pierce's article is one that, and it's Ian, there's a bit from Ian Ayre in there, who, and I felt so much more confident about how Liverpool were doing things from interviewing Ian and for the Bobby Doc in the summer, of like him just describing the process and how Liverpool manage things and what have you. It does feel like it's everything's settling down a touch. I don't know what you think, Dan, but you know, being better on the pitch is a big part of this. Seeing the players that have been bought, helping that be a thing has taken a lot of pressure off those. They're securing the minority investment. It was actually mentioned of like the ownership stuff's been kind of put to bed. Not for everyone, by the way. I think people, obviously there's some people who are just desperate for a total takeover of the football club, but it's taken that off the table. You know, that's not something that looks like they're actively searching for anymore. Okay, it's not done and there's still some issues over the Annie Road, but there's been work being done on it again all of a sudden. So like 2 months ago, it felt like we were an absolute shit show. And now I can see a world where I could see Liverpool actually getting back on track.
Well, again, it stemmed back further than that, to be honest with you. Like what was happening on the pitch at times last season was, and it felt like a reflection off the pitch, because if we weren't talking about disappointing performances and what we'd seen in front of our eyes, we were talking about people and important people leaving the club, and it was like, God, they're really making a mess of this. And what was so frustrating at times last season is Jurgen Klopp and other people have sort of prided what Liverpool were doing on being a collective effort, and so much of it was sort of put on the fact that we did have the best in class in positions all the way throughout the club. And it was like, FSG, for all their faults, they've got good people in and it's a well-run model and it's strategic, and that word stability is absolutely pivotal. Whilst we're competing against states, essentially, Liverpool had this X factor, we had this edge because we had these people and we had these systems, we had this way we did business, and it just worked seamlessly. And then all of a sudden Michael Edwards leaves and his successor Julian Ward decides after 10 months that he's not sticking around either. It were people, Ian Graham moves on as well, and you're like, wow, hang on a minute, like everything that made us so brilliant is suddenly unraveling in front of our eyes. And it didn't feel like, whether FSG were caught on the hop or whatever, didn't feel like it had an answer. And then you get the takeover of the investment stuff and they're looking for a buyer and all that type of stuff. It's like, God, this is getting real messy real quick. So
and
you're
then
right,
you bring someone out of retirement to take over.
Exactly. And even that is a bit a massive
he's
left
working
field
in Germany at the time.
Exactly. Left field, as you like, literally. And he's, by all accounts, I spoke to Honigstein at the time, he's like, oh, this guy's a bit of a volatile character. Like, if he gets in front of the press, he could say some stuff that Liverpool aren't going to like. And you're like, what are they doing? Like, what decisions? All this sort of clear thinking and the decision making had been so brilliant for so many years. All of a sudden, in the space of like 12 months, it felt like it was just getting all thrown out the window. But now, to come full circle on it, you're right, it does feel like it's settling down a little bit. And you might have sort of pinned some more hopes on Schmadtke for a shorter term, but I think there does need to be an answer there. That's one of the remaining questions for me, whereby we don't have the guy. I still feel like that's the one that we're missing.
It's just that thing, isn't it, Chris, is that I've been sat with Liverpool at the top of the mountain, or at least right on the upper echelons of footy, and going, oh, this is all great. They've managed to get it all working. That's, you know, you're marvelling at all these players we've assembled, these great games, great performances. And, you know, there is that fear when it feels like it's unravelling of, was this just a moment in time? Because we'll quite happily sit here and go, ha, 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 Brighton, scoff. We're the envy of everyone right now. But let's face it, they're just the next Southampton in waiting. We see this all the time. Clubs who just, they punch above their weight, they get a good headwind.
They can only sustain it for so long.
Exactly. It's a law of diminishing returns. Eventually, the magic wears off, because unless you've got the most money, inevitably, you have to find clever ways, and money always wins out. And that's been the biggest underlying fear with Liverpool, is because City are never going to not have this money while they're still owned the way that they're owned. And it's like, oh, is that our time done? Whereas I don't know how you feel. It's probably still early days to be totally confident about it, but it does feel far more likely that Liverpool will get back to be able to punch up again.
It does. As long as we've got Jurgen Klopp in charge, I'll always think there's a chance of us getting back to the top of the mountain, because he's the difference maker for us, for all the good work that FSG and those people, Michael Edwards and Julian Ward, did. Jurgen Klopp's what elevates the squad and makes them and coaches those players to be good players. You can bring great players in, but with shit coaching, they're not going to become world beaters, they're not going to become world class players. You go on and win things. You know, you've seen that the football history is littered with talented footballers that have never achieved anything because the coaching wasn't right and stuff. So, yeah, while Jurgen Klopp's there, of course, I think it feels like we're settling down. It feels like we're settling down more from the fact that we've essentially rebuilt two areas of our team. Last season we rebuilt the attack. This season we've rebuilt the midfield. There's still probably a defensive rebuild to do over the next year or so. And then it will settle down even more. But it looks like, when you look at the team now, we've got the right players. We've got brilliant footballers who can go on and improve and be coached by Jurgen and get to the sort of top of the tree. So while he's there, we can do anything.
Claire, I'll get your thoughts on that just to wrap up. But Plu here in the comments says, Brighton do have a rich owner though. Yeah, but the point is, Brighton don't have a 50, 60,000 capacity stadium. They don't have the global revenues. They don't have the global fan base. All the things that you actually need to be able to sustain yourself as a top force, to get there takes...
And they won't have the manager if they carry on like this.
Well, exactly, you know, and that's the thing. And right now, they are in a pool below, and you're right, all the best players get poached by teams above, and the managers are going to continue to get poached. How do you sustain that before you get to the top is the big
thing. He's rich, but he's not like Man City, Newcastle, that's rich.
Yeah. How are you feeling about everything, Clon?
I'm excited. I've had two very, very boring weeks without Club Footy. I'm excited to see the Reds back. I'm hoping, you know, that... I mean, we've all been on international duty, so when I say break, half of us haven't had a break. But I'm excited to get back at Anfield. I'm excited for the derby to be the first one. Hopefully it sets the tempo. And we go on a bosh on a form until another boring international break again. But I'm just excited. This team, I've bought into absolutely everything, the players, the manager, obviously, but every single player in that dressing room I adore. I can get behind and fully support, and at this moment in time they're giving me hope and they're letting me dream and believe. And if they can keep doing that and put us in with a shout for the rest of the season, then it's another boss ride watching the Reds, and that's all that we really can ask for.
I am, given the absolute shit show that is like Manchester United and the ongoing problems with the Chelsea, even though they have all the things that I think a lot of people clamouring Liverpool to have over the summer, and they'll get back to being a good side eventually. Both of them will.
I do not want Raheem Sterling.
Okay.
Just putting out
there. Let's have Raheem Sterling. Yeah, it's nice to, once the footy's underway and it's not all in hypothetical, you start to have some physical evidence to back up whether you should be, think it's okay or think it's fucked or whatever. It is nice to kind of look around and go, yeah, we're just not the head news story anymore. We're not the absolute banter fodder anymore. Everything just seems to be kind of ticking along. Everyone's talking about Tottenham. People are talking about Manchester City. People are talking about Man United. Nobody, and I know a week ago and a half ago, everyone was talking about Liverpool for completely different reasons. But I'm glad that we're not like we're not favourites for the title. I'm glad no one really thinks it. There's still like really respected journalists and pundits who think Liverpool are a mess and they've got loads of issues. Whereas it's kind of nice to kind of take a bit of a straw poller on the fan base and go, he's all right. Are you all right? You're all right. Yeah, I'm all right with the two, actually. I think we're doing all right. So yeah, good. Long may that continue. Right, we're going to be carrying on the conversation over on the Biased Football Podcast over on redmenplus.com. We're going to be taking a look at the fixtures in this little spell for Manchester City, for Tottenham Hotspur, and for Arsenal. Yes, they're the other team that are in there. I have a little bit of a chat around the teams in that little core below us, the Newcastles, Villas, Brightons, etc., and see whether
and
we
the ones
any of
below
them,
which are Manchester United and Chelsea. Hmm.
Correct, Amundo. We're
going to be and below them, Everton Football Club.
below. Yes, we're going to have a good old chat around Man United's current woes as well, as they've agreed or on the verge of agreeing minority investment. But all it's done is make their fans even more angry. Gary Neville's put like a 7,000-word manifesto out on Twitter. The Prime Minister. Instead of football's kicking off.
Paul, the paper version of that tweet was unbelievable. He was cutting out fucking headlines from newspapers and doing it like a ransom note.
Brilliant. So yeah, we're going to be discussing all that. Jamie Carragher having a laugh at his expense as well. Yeah, so come and join us over on the Biased Football Podcast over on redmenplus.com. You can get it in video live. If you're right here now, head over there and you'll be able to sign up and get it in time. Or you can listen to it after the fact in podcast form as well. So thank you so much. Guys, absolute pleasure. Look forward to the derby. There'll be a match preview later on in the week. And of course, we'll be live for the watch-alongs at the weekend as well. So thank you so much for joining us. Have a boss week. Ta-da.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.